Mama, thank you and welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Today, Scouting America, formerly the Boy Scouts, will be sponsoring a food drive in support of the Southeast Alaska Food Bank. We'll talk with some of the scouts about this project. Title Echoes, the literary journal published by UAS, is launching next week. We have a preview with Professor Emily Wall and a couple of student editors. Pink Martini is coming to Juneau on April 19th. We have a story about it from KCAW's Catherine Rose. And we'll begin today finding out about the Ted Stevens Legislative Internship Program from the Political Science Department at the university. Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon from your community-supported public media station, KTOO. You can also catch us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. But first, the Thlinkit word of the week.
You're listening to KTOO's Thlinkit word of the week. This week's word comes from Cushtuck-U, Bill Fawcett. And the word this week is Nach.
No.
That means octopus. And here is a sentence. What are you baiting with? Oh, it's an octopus. Let's hear it again.
No.
Octopus. Gunas Chish to Rene Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Cushtuck o Ish Bill Fawcett was Slukach Adi and the child of a southern Toshone man who passed away before Bill was born. His mother later married Tsihua Bill Fawcett, who helped raise Bill. He lived on Okquan Ani and enjoyed working with advanced language learners, helping them answer difficult questions about the language.
And tune in next week for another Thlinkit Word of the Week from KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Boston Christopher. Every year from January to May, when the Alaska legislature is in session in Juneau, students from UA system. Yeah, it's interesting from the UA system may work as interns in the state, in the office of a state senator or representative in the state capitol. They'll earn 12 credits toward their degree. The program is jointly supported by the Legislative Council of the Alaska State Legislature, the University of Alaska, and the Ted Stevens Foundation. Glenn Wright out at UAS is the program coordinator and joins me now in the studio, along with E.J. Richards, who is also currently in the program. Gunath Chish Shatyeadi, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you both in the studio today. Wasiati, how are you today, Glenn?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm excellent. And you, E.J.?
I'm doing good. How about you?
You're probably busy right about now.
Yeah, it's pretty busy right now. I will say I'm kind of a fan of the kind of shuffle and mad dash for all of it, but definitely busy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll get into it in a little bit more detail here. It's interesting because I was taking that language directly from the website on UAS, but it says UAA. So I was like, I got a little confused there for a second.
That's funny. Yeah. So
Glenn, tell me a little bit about this Ted Stevens Legislative Internship Program. Where did it begin?
Yeah, so back in the sands of time, there was actually a legislative internship program back in the 60s and the 70s. It kind of fell away in the early 80s. Mm. And then my predecessor in the late 80s, my predecessor at UAS, a political science professor by the name of Clive Thomas, decided to sort of rebuild the legislative internship program through the University of Alaska system.
Okay.
And at the time, he had the support of a number of prominent legislators, and of course the university president's office and some things like that. and placed his first students in the legislature in 1988.
Oh,
and
wow.
So what does that make it? Something like the
close to 40-something years.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Maybe even 50.
Yeah, exactly. And
getting up there.
Yeah, and so Clive ran the program for 20 years or something, and I was hired at UAS in 2011. But I had been an undergrad up at UAF in the late 90s and early 2000s, and actually had gone through the internship program myself, and was a student of Clive's, and so I knew the program. And it was a fun, although somewhat weird, transition for me to come in 2011, 2012 and take it over, and I've been doing it ever since.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So how does it work? Obviously, it sounds like anybody in the UA system can be a part of this program.
That's right.
You don't to be at UAS necessarily.
Correct, yeah.
And so how do you get involved?
Yeah, well, so you found the website. We have a program website at uas.alaska.edu/internprogram. And
nice URL.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah. And students at UAF and UAA apply to the program through faculty who work on their campuses. Students at UAS apply to the program through me. And we help to, you know, we admit students into the program in the fall. We help to place them in legislative offices, typically in late November and early December, and then they come down in January, or of course, in some cases, we have Juno-based students who are already here. And they work through, at a minimum, through the what the statutorily recognized 90-day legislative session, and they're allowed to continue up until the end of the regular 120-day session in May. And yeah, and the internship, EJ can talk about it, like sort of his experience probably better than me, but you know, we have a really unique legislature. It's unusual in that it's on the one hand, it's quite small. You know, legislative offices are physically small, and you know, it's a legislator and maybe two or three or maybe a few more staff people, but they're not large organizations. And then at the same time, a lot of state legislatures are not meant to be professional organizations, or sort of so-called citizen legislatures, where, you know, the legislator may not be working full time, they may not be paid enough to sort of make politics their job, and there may not be any legislative staff. And so we're in this kind of unique position where our legislature is smaller than, you know, than a Washington or a California state legislature, and yet it's also a professional organization. So students can come in and learn the ropes from experienced staff people and experienced professional legislators who know how politics works.
So we'll talk to EJ in a second, but I'm just curious, what kind of students should be looking into an internship in the legislature? Is it just political science majors? Is it other students? What's the range of student that you would think would be interested in this?
I am a political science professor, so of course I love to get political science students, but we're interested in recruiting students from, you know, from every conceivable major. And we've had students probably in a typical year, maybe 60 or 70% of my students come out of poli-sci programs at UAA, UAF, or UAS. But we have students every year from the other social sciences, from the humanities. I'm trying to think. This year we have at least one marine bio student. It's not uncommon for us to get students out of the natural science and engineering field. So oftentimes when I talk to legislators, they'll express interest, obviously, in students who are interested and know a little bit about politics. But they're also really thrilled to have students that have interests and expertise in kind of policy areas that they're engaging with.
That's so maybe, what I was thinking is like people who would be in like marine biology, or I've talked to some people on the show who are into the thing, but they're really on the policy side.
You got
it. So understanding how that all works is this would be a great way to do that.
And over the years, we've built a couple of ways to deliver academic credits to those students in ways that are a little more I don't know, a little more amenable to their respective degree programs. So EJ's getting poli-sci credit. And you mentioned that typically our students get 12 credits in political science to do the internship program. It's a full-time semester course load. But we also deliver We also deliver credits through our environmental studies program at UAS, and we also offer course options in Alaskan Native Studies, and we offer the internship is a series of graduate courses, I guess, in public administration.
I see. Okay. Yeah. And did I see something on the website that people who are in this program get a stipend of some sort?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So we're supported by private philanthropy. Our largest, most significant donor is the Ted Stevens Foundation, which is why we're the Ted Stevens internship program. And they provide us with a gift every year that we're then able to pass on to students in the form of a stipend. So students are coming to Juno. Sometimes they're already here, but they're working full time in the legislature. And of course, typical University of Alaska students are, they're working. They may be working full time as they're in school.
Right.
So coming and doing a full time internship, it's a big ask for folks to sort of give up everything, maybe move their lives down here and pick up this new thing for a couple of months. And so that stipend is really helpful in being able to sort of ease the transition and help cover people's costs. So it's $6,500 for a full time student now. That's the stipend that our students receive.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. So EJ, you are currently in this program. Where are you residing currently? I mean, where do you go to school? Sorry.
Currently, I'm going to school at the UAS location in Sitka, but I'm over here for the internship.
Okay, great. Yeah. So that's what I want to know is where you're over in Sitka. Okay.
Yes.
So, and what made you apply for the internship program?
It's kind of a funny story because it does kind of connect back to what Dr. Wright said earlier. And I don't actually necessarily come from a political science oriented background. Mm-hmm. My main thing is education. I want to get a teaching degree and then teach in the public schools in Alaska is the end goal. However, during my junior and senior years in high school, I did a lot of work with public education policy. So as a student, I got the opportunity to participate in a four-day fly-in for 2 years, my junior senior year. Essentially, the short side of it is you train for the first 2 days on how to advocate, and then the second 2 days, you'll be in the legislature, talking to legislators. You can also testify on certain bills that involve education. And so that was kind of my introduction into the Alaska State Legislature.
I see. Okay. And so what are you doing in the current internship? What kind of things do you do?
I do a lot. So not necessarily – like a lot of subject matter. So I am temporary, and so my office doesn't necessarily want to commit me to something that I'd have to be there for until the end of session. And so I kind of do a lot of – a little bit of everything. So I do help prep my representative for state affairs, which is a committee. I've been doing a lot of work with public school funding and education as well. But it's also, sometimes the errands, like go run this folder down to this office or go
typical
inquire.
Typical intern things.
Yeah, I'm an intern for sure.
Yeah. And so what are you learning so far? I mean, you're about, halfway through session about?
Yeah, I'm learning a lot.
Yeah.
I almost like to compare the legislature to – it's like theater. It's everyone kind of plays their part, and it's this one big moving machine that everyone needs to put effort in to get moving. And so that's one of the things I've been learning is just how much effort it actually really takes from everyone in the legislature to get this work done and forward the work that's done in the building.
To get everybody situated and coordinated in the same place at the same time. Yeah,
yes.
That could be a lot of things. So what are your big takeaways so far?
Big takeaways. I think my biggest takeaway is it just puts into perspective for me, how hard everyone works. And for me, it's a reflective, but also I'm just grateful for everything. I'm so grateful for the opportunity to even be in this internship, but I'm super grateful and want to shout out the office I'm in. I'm working for Representative Himshute, and the staff there has been super accommodating to me. They've surrounded me with love and passion, and I just really appreciate those people. I am now currently a better person because of that staff, and
oh,
it's just
great.
A really wonderful opportunity for our youth to become civically engaged, because that's something that even in the legislature is trying to be addressed, this kind of disconnect between the legislature and Alaska's youth. And so I think this internship is an excellent bridge to kind of bridge the youth after they graduate from high schools in Alaska into civic engagement or just into the workforce in general in Alaska.
And what year are you at in school right now?
A sophomore, or this is my second year in college.
Second year, okay. Yeah. And so do you anticipate trying to do more work in the future with the legislature? You want to come back in some way?
I think I do. I wouldn't say no for sure, but it's kind of a cross between – I definitely want to – you know, I really want to teach. I think it's of the utmost importance, education. And, you know, it's a good cause to go work in public education. They need teachers, and it's something that would – for me would be extremely fulfilling to do. But on the other hand, I could totally see myself being a staffer in the legislature. It's been a blast. And I think one of the most entertaining parts of it for me is just how much new stuff I've learned. Mm. There's some stuff that I just couldn't even imagine not necessarily being an expert, but being knowledgeable about. So I'm just thankful for the wealth of information that's been provided to me.
I'm curious about that. Like when you have somebody in the legislature, a legislator who's you know, they have so many things that they have to know and vote on and like material to read and it's just – can it be overwhelming?
Absolutely. I don't necessarily want to speak for any of the legislators in the building, but I would see it very hard for them to do it completely alone. There is just so many moving parts and you almost need that staff to kind of ease in the burden and get the information that you need to then pass along that message, you know, when they're on the floor or when they're in committee. And so, it's a bunch of moving parts. It's one big machine operated by a bunch of smaller machines, you know.
And do you get to go on the floor and watch everything going on during the day or –
Like not on the actual floor, but there's public galleries in the legislature, so anyone can be in those. I mean, even just regular members of the public can be in those at all times. So
you recommend this internship program to people listening out there?
Absolutely, without hesitation. I mean, it is really a crucial bridge in order to get more of Alaska's youth involved in civics.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely.
It's something that the state kind of lacks in is that connection to the youth regarding, you know, government and civic engagement. So I highly encourage, yes.
Cool. So Glenn, tell us one more time, how do we get involved in this program? Obviously, you have to be a student in the UA system.
That's right. Although we also accept interns into the program occasionally who have come to us through some student exchange, occasionally a national student exchange student or an international exchange student will participate in the internship as well. But the way to find out about the application process is on that website. So it's uas.alaska.edu/internprogram. Or you can just Google Ted Stevens internship. It pops right up. And we have an application process that happens in the fall. Our student applications are due at the end of October. And and from there we help to work students through a placement process to get them into the building.
I love it. That sounds so great. It's the Ted Stevens Legislative Internship Program. As Glenn said, you can find out more about it at uas.alaska.edu/internprogram. Glenn Wright and EJ Richards, thank you so much. Glenn, thanks for being here and telling us a little bit about it.
Of course. Thank you very much.
I really appreciate it. Okay, up next, Pink Martini is coming to Juneau. If the United Nations had a house band in the 1960s is the tagline for Pink Martini. They're from Portland, Oregon. They're going to play in Sitka and Juneau next month. The series of concerts will benefit the same group that brought Portugal the Man to Southeast last year, with funds going toward rebuilding a Thlinkit clan house in Sitka. KCAW's Catherine Rose previews the event. This is Juneau Afternoon on KTOO.
In the mid-90s, there was a campaign to amend the Oregon Constitution that sought to restrict gay rights. Thomas Lauderdale, a young political activist and pianist, was fighting against it, and music was the means. Lauderdale reached out to the Del Rubio triplets after seeing them on the star-studded Pee-wee's Playhouse Christmas special.
You keep saying you got something for me.
They lived in a triple-wide mobile home in San Pedro, California. They wore matching miniskirts, matching booties, and they had huge hair. They played guitar and they sang covers of Walk Like an Egyptian and Whip It.
He brought them to Portland, Oregon, to do a series of concerts campaigning against the ballot measure in nursing homes, hospitals, even Rotary meetings.
And at the end of their set, they would very sweetly say, please vote no on Measure 13.
At the end of the triplets' week on tour, Lauderdale had planned a community-wide concert, but he needed an opening act. So he says he threw on a Betsy Johnson cocktail dress, hopped on stage, and Pink Martini was born. Growing to over a dozen musicians, they became the house band for political fundraising in Portland, and soon an internationally renowned, genre-defying group.
Somebody told me, I don't know who, whenever you are sad and blue, and you're feeling all alone and left behind, just take a look inside you and you'll find.
And now, Pink Martini will travel to Sitka and Juneau in April for two benefit concerts for Cat Leanne Collective, a nonprofit working to revitalize Tlingit clan houses in Southeast, starting with the Point House in Sitka. Clan houses are cultural centers for Tlingit people, places of ritual, community, and tradition. It's a project that Pink Martini is happy to support. The band, known as the Little Orchestra, performs in numerous styles, from jazz to classical to pop, and in over 30 different languages.
We're sort of musical diplomats and ambassadors, and we sort of believe in the power of bringing people together through music. We have a 31-year history of doing this, and we're so delighted to be coming to Alaska to be continuing in that tradition.
Hold me close, sway me more, like a flower bending.
Storm Large is one of the band's lead singers, and this will be her second time touring in Alaska with them. She says often a band's lead singer is the mouthpiece that carries its identity, but Pink Martini is different.
It's like laughing. Kind of. It's a big variety show, and everybody has an important role in unison. But I see Pink Martini as a collective of wonderful, amazing, brilliant stars in their own right.
My name is Jericho Blang. My Tlingit name is Sutin, and I am of the Raven Moiety Kiksati clan from Sitka, Alaska.
Hope Lang says the work to rebuild the clan house started from a conversation with the late Bertha Karras.
We walked by this chunk of property on our way to her house, and she said to me, just casually, that's your people's property and you need to get it back. At the time, I really had no idea or no concept as to what tied me to that land and what her impression was that I had any business being a part of it. So kind of led me down a rabbit hole to understanding what had been there prior.
What came next was over a decade of work toward repatriating the land where the Point House stood. Hope Lang now stewards the land on behalf of the Kiksati. They hope to break ground on a 21st century clan house sometime in the next year.
And so to honor the property, I said we need to rebuild. Not just structurally, because this is a brick and mortar project, but we need to rebuild spiritually. And there's ideas that tie to that property that I just felt like the time was ripe.
The group has received federal grant funding for their work and succeeded in getting the National Trust for Historic Preservation to recognize Sitka's Indian Village as an endangered historic place. They're also remodeling a 19th century Kiksati clan house four doors down from the Point House. Hope Lang says fundraising is key to keep the work going. Last year, Cat Leanne Collective brought several bands, including Portugal the Man, to Southeast, and the concert was a resounding success. So he reached out to his longtime friend Lauderdale with Pink Martini, who jumped on board.
This year, bringing Pink Martini into the fold, it really creates this open dialogue of like, we are inviting you. The purchasing of a ticket is an invitation to be a guest in our process. You could be part of this restoration, this regeneration, this restorative practice.
Hope Lang says Pink Martini's music encompasses the name of the show, which is Hit Woosh Day Yada Kitscht, or Dancing Our House Together. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
Pink Martini will play Juno on April 19th at 6 p.m. at Centennial Hall. JAHC.org is for tickets, and pointhouse.org, you can get more information on the Klan House revitalization projects. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com. Federally insured by NCUA.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansengress.com/careers.
I love it. I love it. This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. We're all learning new terms here. Scout fits. Because I was just admiring the outfits that are here. Scouting America, formerly the Boy Scouts, is holding their Scouting for Food event, a food drive to help the Southeast Alaska Food Bank. And I am joined in the studio now by some Scoutmasters, a Cubmaster, and a Scout. and this is so great. So I have Eleanor Carpenter, who is a Scout in Troop 11. I have Corey Padron, who is the Scout Master of Troop 11. And then I also have Fred Thornsteinson, who is the Cub Master of Pack 6. That's so cool. So let's talk first a little bit, Corey, about Troop 11, because it's called a family troop. And can you tell me, because I know that Scouting America is the new name for Boy Scouts of America, which, and it changed a year or so ago. And so what does it mean by a family troop? What does that mean?
So it's a fairly recent change. The family troop encompasses all types of scouts, so boys and girls, ages 11 to 17. So like currently we have, I think, 6 girls and 3 boys. And going on the family part, we actually have 2 sets of siblings in the troop right now.
Oh, excellent. Okay.
So it's, in my opinion, it's really helpful for families instead of sending them to different troops just because they're a boy or a girl.
Maybe they can learn to work together as brother and sister. That's kind of fun.
Yes.
Okay.
So, cool. So yeah, we include everybody. And scouts.
And this is just so people are aware, because there's still the Girl Scouts of America, but the Scouting America is, they're 2 different organizations, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Eleanor, tell me a little bit about how you got involved in Scouting America. And you were commenting that your scout fit, which we just learned is a term.
It's not a real term,
but we use it. And because your uniform still says Boy Scouts of America.
Yeah.
So this is a relatively new change. But tell me about how you first got involved in the scouting troop.
Well, I don't know if it's a new change or if my uniform's just old. I joined I joined scouting pretty much the week that they let me. Mm. My family, all of the men in my family have been scouts going back a few generations. Mm-hmm. And it was a really important part of my dad and my grandfather's childhood to be Boy Scouts. Mm. And so I was actually simultaneously both a Girl Scout and a Boy Scout for a few years of my scouting career. I enjoyed both the organizations. But in the end, I decided to prioritize Boy Scouts, or what is now Scouting America.
Mm-hmm.
I have really loved my experience in scouting. It's been super valuable to me. I joined when I was about to go into the 6th grade.
Okay.
So that would be 20, was it 2018 or 2019 that they let girls in? One of those years.
That would be recent, the year. Yeah.
At the time, you know, it was separated by gender. So girls did activity meetings together, boys did meetings together, and then we, of course, would meet for activities, activities occasionally. But it's been a really amazing experience to be in scouting and getting an opportunity to do things like the National Boy Scout Jamboree. I was involved in the first United States National Boy Scout Jamboree, which is like Burning Man for scouts.
Oh, nice.
Out in the foothills in West Virginia.
I love that.
And that was the first one that ever allowed girls. And it was a really lovely experience. I've met a lot of really amazing women through this program. And I've also met, learned a lot of lessons that I don't think I would have learned if I hadn't joined Boy Scouts and gotten a lot of really great outdoor and people skills.
Ah, nice. I love that. And Fred, you were saying right before we went on the air, you've been in scouting for 70 years.
That's true.
So tell me a little bit about the changes that you've seen over those 70 years.
Well, when I started out, it was 1957, which is almost 70 years ago.
Yeah.
There was only three, well, there was four ranks. You started out as a bobcat, and you went wolf, bear, lion. There was only four grades in school that were included, and it was all boys.
Mm.
And throughout most of that time, Cub Scouting and Boy Scouting was only for boys until recently.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen the program expand first to include first grade kids and then to include kindergarten. And every time I have to say I was a little bit skeptical, but the results were really good. And the program works really well. The age groups meet separately in what they call den meetings, and they usually meet 2 to 3 times a month.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole group, the pack, gets together once a month, and we have a large activity, something fun like a Pinewood Derby or a carnival, a camp out.
Yeah.
This time, this month, it's a food drive that we're participating in, trying to give the kids an opportunity to do something for someone else, the program isn't just focused on them receiving something. They give something back to the community.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
And you work with kindergarten through fifth grade.
Yes.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
And we have both boys and girls. Same, we're a family pack.
Family pack. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're at Pack 6, yeah.
Pack 6.
And do Cub Scouts and the scouting, because you kill, okay, so here's my question. So when I was in it, I was in Boy Scouts, you would be a Cub Scout, that's what you would call it, and then you would become a Boy Scout. But now it's Scouting America, so what do you call yourself? Just a Scout?
They're all just Scouts now.
Scouts, yeah. Okay, but you can still be a Cub Scout.
You're a Cub Scout.
Then you become a Scout.
Correct.
Okay. Master Scout. I don't know. It would be, that'd be kind of fun. A Bear Scout. Something cool. Do you still earn badges and stuff in the Scouts? Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your favorite badge that you've earned, Eleanor? You know, it's okay. You're fine. You're fine. We can hear you.
My favorite badge. The funnest badge I've ever gotten to do.
Yeah.
Was the the skating merit badge. We got to do the ice skating merit badge.
Oh, nice.
Which was really fun. The most enlightening, I'll say, is the one I'm doing right now. I just had an appointment this morning with a meeting with members of my troop to work on the citizenship and community merit badge.
Oh, nice.
Which is all about appreciating the community you're in and the scout's place within it, and also your place in your community and appreciating like Juno.
Well, and that leads right into the reason you're here today, which is to talk about this food drive. So, Corey, tell me a little bit about how this food drive came about and what you all are doing as scouts for this drive.
Okay. So this is a pretty regular thing that scouts around the country are doing various times a year. Here in Juno, we typically do it in April.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll usually be done over 2 days of work for us, planning right now for April 4th. Most of the troops are in packs are going to send out their scouts around the community in different areas, and we're going to include some flyers with instructions about how to donate food, leave them in bags for April 11th, and then the scouts will come back around and pick up whatever food people decide to donate. And then if for whatever reason we're not able to get to your area, there's also instructions where you can take that food to the food bank.
Okay.
So as Fred was saying, it gives us an opportunity to get out in the community. You can see scouts out handing out the bags and the flyers and information about scouts, going out and picking it up. And then we'll all meet at the food bank on the 11th and get together and deliver the food.
Oh, that's awesome. That's really fun. So if we're seeing scouts in our neighborhood, that's probably what they're doing. Are you going door to door and like knocking on people's doors, or how's it working? How do I get involved?
We put flyers in plastic grocery bags and hang them on doorknobs with the information, or at least that's how Troop 11 does it.
That's the same we do.
Okay. And then we do a pickup about a week later. So we're going to be distributing the bags around April 4th and doing pickup on April 11th.
So you're not going to knock on my door. You're going to leave me a little flyer in a bag.
Yes.
Okay. And that's kind of cool. And then I just leave that bag out on the 11th, and you're going to come swing back by and get it. Mm-hmm. How easy. Yeah. That's so easy. It's such an easy way to participate. That's really cool. And are the scouts earning badges for being involved in this? I'm just curious. I like the badges part.
Well, it's a portion of earning a badge. A lot of ranks patches, which aren't merit badges, but the rank patches that we have require community service hours, and this is a way for scouts to clock those in.
I see. Okay. And Eleanor, what do you think, having been a scout for a while now, how do you think this has helped you as you progress forward in life?
Well, there's something to be said that everyone needs some experience in community service in their life. But there's also something special about going out in the community as a scout and being able to show kind of an aspect of our community or a group that acts within our community that we don't usually get to do.
I think that's great. And Fred, when you're talking about, I'm also curious about, like, how do people get their kids involved in, is it just go to scoutingamerica.org? Is that the easiest
way
to
there's
do it?
An online link that you can go to. It's called beascout.org. And you can go there and look in your community and find the units that are there, and there's contacts. And you can also make an application right online there. If you do that, then the unit that you're interested in gets a message alerting them that you're interested in joining.
I see.
And then you make a then we call people back and fill them in on all the details.
Beascout.org. That's the website. Yep. Okay, that's kind of cool. And Fred, I'm just curious. You've been doing this a long time. Do you have like a favorite moment in all these years in scouting? I'm sure you have many. But is there something that stands out for you in terms of I'm keeping you going and you're continuing to do it? So there must be something really great about it.
Well, I really enjoy the scouting program. I like watching the young people develop from being fairly timid and they become more outgoing. By the time the kids are earning the Arrow of Light, which is the highest award in Cub Scouting, they usually can stand up and do public speaking through skits or other programs without being afraid. And so the whole program gives the kids a basis that they can use later in life to make a moral or ethical decision. We always hand out at the graduation ceremony is a little coin that has the scout laws and the scout oath on it. And we tell the kids, you know, if you have a difficult decision to make, just keep the coin in your pocket, pull it out, look at it, and you'll make the right decision.
Oh, that's so cool. Yeah, this is great. And so this food drive is basically going to be starting, you're going to be starting to hand out the flyers on April 4th. So in your neighborhood, you could be looking for that. And if you don't end up with a flyer at your door to be able to give, you can also just leave, take some food to the food bank itself and say it's for this food drive. Is there a goal that you all have for this? Are you trying to get a certain amount of food donated to the local food bank?
I can answer that one.
Yeah.
Typically, I see us getting about 4,000 pounds of food for the food
that's
drive,
a lot of food.
And that's and then also the troops or the PAC in Douglas donates their food to a food bank. I think at the Methodist Church, and I'm not sure how much they get, but
that's
it's a significant amount of support for the community.
That's great. And we do want to mention that this is a non-perishable food that you want to be giving. So canned vegetables, canned fruit, tuna, pasta, oatmeal, cereal, rice, dried canned beans, soups, peanut butter and jelly, all those kinds of things, non-perishable foods that can be part of this. And so look for it around your neighborhoods. Look for the scouts, leaving some flyers on your door for the Scouting for Food drive that's coming up April 4th, and they're going to pick up that food on April 11th. And beascout.org is the best site to go to if you're interested in getting your kiddo involved in scouting, which is kind of cool. Any last words, Corey? Anything else we need to know?
I'd say, as long with Be a Scout, we welcome people walking in. If you're curious about seeing what it's, you know, stop by a meeting or reach out and see what activities we're doing, and we can include your kids in our program.
I love that. That's so cool. Well, Eleanor, Corey, Fred, thank you so much for coming in and telling us a little bit about the Scouting for Food drive happening with Scouting America.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death, located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm Boston Christopher. Title Echoes, the annual literary journal published by UAS, launches next week with a special event on Thursday, April 2nd at 7 p.m. out at the university. I am joined now by Emily Wall, who is the faculty advisor, and two of the three editors for this year. I have Kat Gray in the house, as well as Maddie Bremer. Gunath Chi, Swasia T. Kat, how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good.
Excellent. Maddie, nice to see you again.
Yes, hello.
And then Emily, welcome.
Hi, nice to see you again,
welcome
Boston.
Back. Yeah. Tell me first a little bit, Emily, about Title Echoes as a program.
Yeah, great. Okay, so Title Echoes is a regional literary and art journal. So we publish writing and art from people who live full-time in Southeast Alaska, all of the communities.
Okay.
And it's published by UAS. And every year we have three students who apply for and earn internships, and they actually edit the journal. So I teach and support. But the students learn the whole process from like the first social media post saying we want work all the way to handing out books on Thursday.
Wow, that's so amazing. And these books are going to be available at your event next week on Thursday?
They are. They're $5 each. So that'll be the first time they're available to the public is at the launch.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. Okay, so and I know we had some folks on. We had you on, I think, back in the fall when, or in August, I think it was. Was that when you take submissions? Is around that time? When does
submissions are due December 1st. So
December.
I think we were here in like November maybe.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Right, so December. So then it becomes all y'all's business to get this thing done.
Yeah.
So, Maddie, tell me a little bit about why did you want to be an editor on Title Echoes?
Well, I first heard about Title Echoes freshman year of college, and I really wanted to get in, but I kind of like sat around and forgot about it. Then I immediately published, and I got in with my piece Husk.
So you were in it first.
Yes. Ah. It was a really, really, really cool experience to be able to be there at the launch and see my work in paper, where I can actually touch it.
Yeah.
And now I said I have to apply to this because I wanted to have more opportunities to get my work and other people's work out there, which was really cool.
And what are you majoring in?
I'm an English major.
Okay, so it fits in perfectly, right?
Yeah.
As this editing process has happened, has it made you more interested in that sort of behind the scenes aspect of it, or do you want to just keep writing?
I think it's a dual of both. I absolutely love the behind the scenes stuff. I really like the aspect of being able to work behind the scenes and work for the local community. I really love that, that sort of part about Title Echoes. And I also like the ability to be like, that's what they're looking for in writing and publishing. That's how I can help my work.
So it helps you understand that other side. Yeah, that's cool. And Kat, what about you? Why did you want to get involved in the editing side?
Yeah, I have actually been following Title Echoes for quite a while. I've never actually submitted, despite that. I've always been very nervous too. But I have friends each year who get in for both artwork and for writing. And when I was kind of presented with the opportunity to like apply, I decided to take my shot at it.
And you got it.
Yes.
Awesome. That's so cool. And what is your major?
So I am doing a BLA interdisciplinary because I wanted to do a little bit more than just one thing. So I am currently focusing on artwork and creative writing.
I see. Okay. Artwork and both things that end up in Title Echoes,
yes,
right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit, Kat, about the process. So once the submissions are in, what happens then?
Yeah, so there's a couple of reads that go through. They're all anonymous, and we go through it with us as editors and then also with our editorial board. And we kind of go through and read and figure out which will be best and which will, what's the word that I'm thinking of? All of the things that will kind of...
Do you have like a criteria that you're looking, that you judge by, or do you, is it more like feel based?
I don't think there's necessarily a criteria. I definitely, there's like word counts and things like that, but okay. It's more of like, is it true to Southeast Alaska is kind of what we're focusing on.
Okay. That makes sense. And, Maddie, how did you find the editorial process? Like, was it difficult to make decisions about what to keep and what to, you know, ditch?
It was so hard to let some of these pieces go, and some of them we just couldn't keep in because of the word count and how many pieces that author might have already had before.
Ah, I see.
So we try to, you know, keep pieces in that want an opportunity and mm-hmm. others that really sing, you know.
Because this book can't be, you know, 80 million pages, right?
It's gotta wish it could.
Yeah, it's not possible. How many pages is it usually? How many pages is the book this year? Do you know?
I believe it's around 130.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Wow. And that includes, and sometimes there's art on a whole page, and then there's
mm-hmm.
sometimes
there's poems.
Yeah, okay.
Both the artwork and the writing.
And the writing, okay. Yeah. And there's a lot of poetry in the book, and there's a lot of prose too, right? Is mm-hmm. there like short stories or narrative, or how what's like the longest piece in the book this
Ooh,
year?
I think the longest piece that we have actually went up to our word count. It's a piece of prose. It is a full mm-hmm. Excerpt. And I believe it was 1,500 words, something like that.
Is that the novel excerpt?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. The novel excerpt. Okay. Yeah. That's cool. And then we have to mention, I'm going to bring up the flyer here for those who might be watching the stream, but the 2026 launch of Title Echoes, it's next Wednesday. Thursday. Yes, April 2nd, 7 p.m. Out of Egan 1112. And It features some people that are university folks. I know we've had Jonas Lamb on the show talking about his book, What Turtle Blood Tastes Like, a fantastic little book. And so tell me about Jonas and, of course, Davina Cole as the artist for this year. How did they get selected? Was that something that was already done before you got involved or okay?
Yes.
Yeah, it was. All right. So how were they involved in helping you? Did they help you at all in terms of this process?
We had Amy Kelleheller, mm-hmm. our other student intern, interview Davina and Jonas and transcribe that into the book and what we essentially paste in later.
I see.
So,
okay.
Yeah, it's a really cool, like, little personal touch of, like, how they do their work, biography, what their work is about. It's really cool because we get to like see the thought process behind and what they do as an artist or writer.
And Emily, are they chosen? How are the featured artists chosen? Is that something that you as a faculty determine beforehand?
Yeah, it's a great question. So every year we have a board. And some people stay on year after year and some people switch. We try to have community members, faculty members. And so we just sort of have a conversation over the year about like, who are we looking at next year? So there's three art faculty who are amazing, who did a lot of work. Bonnie Parker, Liz Zacher, Jeremy Kane. And then the writing board is typically a lot of faculty. We have a community member, Brian Palmer, this year. And we just sort of keep our eye out. One thing that we do is a couple of the people we've chosen are people that have submitted multiple years in a row and get in every time. And we think, wow, we just really love their work, you know. we should feature them. And, and then we look at their bios. We try to have people from around the communities, so it's not always Juno this year. This year is very unusual because it's actually two UAS people, which we've never had before.
Oh, okay, so that's what I was wondering because they both work at UAS. but it's not necessarily nepotism in that way. It's just that this is who they decided to highlight this year.
We actually asked Jonas last year, but he rightly so was like, hey, my book's coming out. Let's wait. And I was like, yeah, that's perfect.
I see.
Okay. So the timing worked out well for that. And the art faculty just love the work that Davina is doing right now. So it's kind of a big collaborative conversation. And last year we had an artist from Sitka, so mm-hmm. we kind of try to bring from various communities.
Well, I like what Kat said. It's like you're highlighting Southeast writers and people all around Southeast. You don't have to be a student to submit to Title Echoes.
Oh, no.
It's a community-supported event. It's just published by UAS, worked on by student editors, which is kind of cool. Now, Maddie, I see that you might have something over there. What is that? I've been looking at it. I'm like, I think that looks like some kind of poetry or something. What is that?
I do have a piece from our 2026 edition. It's called Blue Tarp City, and it's written by Mary Capo Bianco from Douglas.
And are you going to read it for us?
If you'd like me to.
I would like you to.
All right. Let me...
Yeah, take a breath.
I dream of blue flowers and the riot of stems, leaves, vines surround me as I lay on my cot, listen to the rain sheets trip-trapping on the tarp. Overhead, look at the diamond blue shine through, tiny, rain-made divots, a steady drip, rapidly increasing. Scroll through daily chores, roll bag, brush dirt, tie down edges, dream of flowers. Iris, forget-me-not, gentian, primrose. Listen to the crinkle of wind through the plastic blue tarps, a nothing-filled day, floating above where we settle. We settle here for a time, forever.
Nice. That's really pretty. So how does that, when you read that for the first time, I guess what I'm wondering is in terms of the editorial process, like how are you deciding? Does it go by like what you're moved by? Is it just something that maybe you can't even put into words, but you're like, okay, this piece is in for sure?
When we go the first read through, I make sure I don't look at the name first.
Uh-huh.
I want it to be as anonymous as possible. And then what I do is I go through and I underline the stuff that really sings for me. It could be lines, could be stanzas, could be imagery, or just like the space that it takes up on the page. It's really certain, really juicy parts of the piece that really, you know, emphasize this person as being expressing themselves really vividly, or that piece vividly, that image, that theme, that story.
Right,
and
right.
Whatever sings loudest, I put a bunch of stars and hearts on it, and I save it for later.
To talk about, because then do the three editors get together? In the end, you have here's all the pieces that we would love to include, and now we have to figure out how to, you know, what they used to say, what, kill your darlings, right? Like you have to sometimes, like, okay, one of these can't go in. Or probably more than one probably can't go in. So Kat, how do you feel when you first are encountering a piece of art or something written? Is it the same way as Maddie? Do you have like a feeling inside or what do you do?
I feel like it is a lot of basically what Maddie does, but I also like to go in and kind of look at the technical aspects of things as well, kind of like, does it have a form? Grammar and spelling are kind of basic, but also there's a lot of things that we have also learned, especially from Emily taking her classes, where it's like, how do the words sound together? Like when you read it in your head versus when you say it out loud, does it have a lot of like... I'm forgetting some of the words right now, but like, how does it sound when you say it? And does it like technically also have a lot of the things that stand out from other pieces that might, you know, need just a little bit more of that polishing?
That's so interesting. I haven't even thought about that, Emily. Like the idea of when you're looking at a poem, obviously you can experience it differently because reading it is one thing, but then saying it out loud, even you reading it out loud, or hearing it out loud. Those are all the different ways you could interact with it. And that's really interesting to think about it that way. That's really kind of cool. So before we end, I just want to find out. So tell me a little bit about this event next week. What's going to be happening? Remind me all of the cool things about the event next week.
We get a wonderful slideshow with our art and poetry on for everyone to see their work. And we have... our featured writers and artists making a lovely little presentation about their work with a Q&A, as well as we have snacks, if that bribes people to come.
Snacks are always good.
And we also have two student readers.
We have four student
readers. We have four.
Well, two student readers and then two community members.
Yes, we have two community members and two student readers reading their work aloud.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's awesome. And again, this is next Thursday, April 2nd at 7 p.m., and it's going to be live streamed. Is that right?
Yes, it will.
It is. So we're really hoping if you're in Juneau, you will come in person for the excellent snacks and buy a book. But if you can't or you're in other communities, it's a really beautiful live stream. So please jump online if you're not able to come in person and watch.
And if I can't make it in person or I don't live in Juneau here, how do I get a copy of Tidal Echoes?
Great question. So pretty much all the everyone in town is selling it.
So it'll be at like Hearthside and all
it'll
that
It'll be Hearthside, Kindred, Alaska Robotics, Rainy Day.
Oh, wow.
Did I miss anybody? It's in all the Southeast bookstores as well if you're not in Juneau.
Yes. And also all of the libraries in town and some of the libraries in other communities are also going to get copies.
Awesome. That's so good. Tidal Echoes, the annual literary journal from UAS. I want to thank Kat, Maddie, and Emily for coming in and telling us a little bit about this cool event happening next week. Happy launch.
Thank you.
The work is almost done. Yay. This is Juneau Afternoon. That's going to do it for today's Juneau Afternoon. You can find the show online at kto.org/JuneauAfternoon. You can find live stream archives on KTO's YouTube page. Financial support comes from Country Financial, Hanson Grass, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, along with Tongass Federal Credit Union. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Good of cheese.